Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore from the top of a mountain, maybe two mountains. How's it going?
I'm tired, man. My legs are tired. I climbed two mountains a day, and everyone, I'm that guy, though, because I'm like, I just got off two mountains, and everyone's like, I don't care. Like, why are you sharing this information? No one cares what you did with your free time. Just talk basketball. And I'm sorry. That's fine.
The question, were the mountains on top of each other?
No, they were they were not on top of each other.
Then I'm not impressed.
Went up and then down and up and then down.
Then I am not impressed at all.
Well, you know what's weird is the taller one I climbed, I went up one that was 10,200, and it was a shorter climb than the one that I did that was only 6,283.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's depends on where you start from. So when someone says, I climbed a 10,000-foot mountain, make sure you ask them, well, where did you start from?
Yeah, if a helicopter dropped me off, like, I don't know, 40 feet from the top, I'd do that.
Right? How was the Woo in Iowa? Did you talk about the Woo in Iowa with Ethan? I haven't listened to the podcast yet.
No, the whole Iowa weekend was quite fun. Show was fun. I even played a little basketball at the Y there. A lady at the counter asked me if I was in town for the Justin Bieber concert, so that was fun. And it was a lot of fun. Everything was good.
Good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I wrote every post in the universe while you were gone.
I did lose my sunglasses.
That sucks.
I think I know where they are, though. I think they're at our friend's house, which Kale, who's one of the people we stayed with, if you find them, send them to me, buddy. He does listen to the podcast every once in a while when he's really bored.
My dad gave me this like really expensive pair of sunglasses that he just happened to have and never wore, and so I'm like terrified of losing them. I'm like constantly freaked out. It's like where are the sunglasses? Oh, thank goodness I found them. Oh, hey, where's my child at? Like, that's where I've gotten to with these shades.
I used to work for Oakley, so I became like a sunglass snob for a while.
Oh yeah.
And then they stopped giving me the discount because I stopped working for them. And now I don't really care so much anymore.
Don't really care.
Yeah.
So today I thought that you and I would play a little best case, worst case.
Ooh.
And
I'll take worst case.
And what we'll do is we'll each take a section and we'll start with the best case and then we'll do the worst case. And we'll talk about why a move is great and why it's terrible.
I like it.
And to prove to everyone when they think that we have these polarizing opinions that really that's pretty arbitrary. And if you were to pay us to change our opinions, we pretty much would. Like, I would.
Oh, I would be so easily bought. I can't even.
So
tell
easily.
You. Yeah.
Like it takes very little for me, and that's what's funny is I'll do a radio spot, and sometimes I'll switch it up when I do radio spots between like this was a terrible move. I just can't understand what they're thinking. And then go, you know, when you look at them long term, this move's really going to work out for just a screw, just because I get bored doing it. So, have we talked Dwight? We haven't talked Dwight.
We have not talked Dwight since it happened.
Okay, we'll start with Dwight Howard. What's the best case scenario with Dwight Howard? If you're gonna pitch me on why Dwight Howard's gonna work in Houston.
Well, best case is they win a championship. Like, and this is like you could say, oh, well, you could say that for anything, but this is like a legit, like, yeah, best case they could win a championship by essentially creating a better version of what Houston put around him. Houston had, you know, spread the floor shooters. They both situations have point guards who don't know how to make post entry passes. With Jameer Nelson and Jeremy Lin, so that's that'll be exciting for Dwight. But if you can build what the Orlando Magic had, but put James Harden in there instead of Hedo, that's pretty good.
I was thinking this morning was the first time because I hadn't, you know, the Kobe Harden comparison is easy to make because they're both shooting guards that shoot a lot. But I started thinking a lot about how that dynamic could be very similar to that Shaq Kobe dynamic in the early 2000s where one didn't really take things all that seriously,
yeah,
and one very much did. And Shaq, like Kobe could never have that, like Dwight could never have that with Kobe because of where Kobe's at in his career now and the power that he has in that locker room and how psychopathic he's become. But like with Harden, I think that there's some give and go there with the power that they can kind of find a balance.
Yes, I do think that there is plenty of room for balance, and the fact that James Harden is so good playing with other guys. He's so good playing with a big man or a guy to kick out to. And I think that he could really, like, just if you can convince Dwight to run some damn pick and roll, Harden's really good at delivering on the pick and roll.
Yeah, if he, like, man, and that would drive me nuts if I was a Lakers fan. If he goes to Houston and is all of a sudden like, no, I love the pick and roll. Why wouldn't I? I'd be slamming my head into the desk. Just like, why? Why do you do this to me? I think how they felt the rest of the roster will be interesting. You know, I like Parsons working with them a lot. I think that he's been underrated in a lot of these conversations in terms of his ability to slash as well as shoot. Like he can shoot, but that guy can also go. He can cut to the rim really well.
I actually look at him kind of like he's not a better player than Rashard Lewis was at that point, but I think he's a similar weapon and maybe a better weapon because of the movement.
And they've obviously got a ways to go because Omer Sheik, they're probably going to do something with. For right now, they're keeping him, but we'll have to see. I actually like Mode Ahunas next to Dwight. I like that idea of a lot.
Yeah, because he can play outside. I like it.
Yeah. Like the big versatile dude. Of course, it's like, oh, hey, there's this big versatile European guy that can hit shots and play low and is a great passer. Shouldn't this work really well? Everyone's still thinking that the point guard position has to be upgraded, but I don't think there's a way for them to really upgrade unless they want to go. Like, I think if they were to go to Atlanta and be like, hey, you know, we'll give you Lynn at half the price of Teague, they might consider it. That one they might do. But yeah. I don't know if you want Jeff Teague enough to make that kind of an upgrade over Lynn.
No, I don't know that that's necessary. I mean, you know, Lynn is actually, I think, fine. Like, he's not the ideal point guard with Dwight, but I think he's fine for now. And I think it'll be a situation where he only has 2 years left on his contract. Like, after this year, and they're going to spend this year getting familiar with each other anyway. After this year, he's an expiring. You can deal him as an expiring. Like, I know we put a little too much value on, oh, this guy's an expiring, so he'll get dealt. And it doesn't happen as much as we'd like it to. But I think with a contract like that, like, it's one thing when you have a $16 million contract to move as an expiring. But an $8 million contract, like, that's very manageable.
Yeah, that really is. I'm writing a thing today about how superstar teams take time. And that'll be a big part of it is, like, this team could definitely win a title. I'm not expecting them to or expecting them to be immediately in the conversation next season. But I think that they very much can be in that level, especially, I mean, all of it is just, you know, look, if Dwight gets back to 2011 level, then they're title contenders. If he goes beyond that, then we're talking about a whole other thing. And that's a huge, I think, question mark. So if we were going to do worst case, what's your worst case scenario?
He tries to force his way out in 2 years.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it. It was the first thing I saw when I saw that deal. I was like, oh man, he can opt out in 3 years. And I was like, wait, that means that he can start demanding an opt out or a trade in two.
Right.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I think we could be right back at this in no time at all.
Right. I think they'll be really amiable to his attitude, but at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, look, man. The locker room went bad in Orlando. The locker room went bad in L.A. At some point, it's not everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that, I mean, Kevin McHale is the best coach of the three to handle that because he is more of a fun-loving players guy than D'Antoni or Van Gundy kind of have the reputation. Like, those guys can get about half the locker room on their side and the other half seem to, like, really detest them. Whereas right. McHale, you just see, like, a point guard here or there not really like him. But for the most part, everyone seems to kind of sing his praises as players go.
I always thought that was a really good fit when I started thinking about Dwight, was that they'll be really good together. That McHale will be the – I think not just from a basketball perspective, but I think McHale will be the figure in Dwight's life that he's wanted, which maybe that's entirely untrue. It's just always seemed like he didn't like Stan because he was too hard on him and just kind of like this caustic boss. And McHale will be so like fatherly to him. I think that he'll respond to that.
I could just imagine a conversation of, you know, Dwight, I did a little acting myself. I was on a couple episodes of Cheers.
Yeah.
And like, Cheers, what's that? And it was a bar, like a strip bar? No, just a regular bar. They have regular bars.
Right. What do you mean, like a non, like a, what do they serve?
Wait, so
beer?
So the waitresses were clothed? Yeah, there was a guy bartender.
What kind of club was this? I think the worst case scenario also is they're not able to add any sort of competent guys around them because nobody wants to, no, like free agents, they won't have enough cap room in order to land the free agents. The vets won't want to go there over some of the other superstar teams, and they're unable to pull off any more trades because the rest of the league is like finally figured out maybe we shouldn't trade with Daryl Morey anymore.
I still think that, I don't know, like Daryl Morey's done a fine job, but I do feel like his praises are being sung a little too high as well.
Really?
Yeah, like you can't tell me.
He got the guy.
He got the guy, but you can't tell me this has been his plan all along. He's been trying to get the guy for years, and it's always been a different guy, and he finally got one, which is great. But if he gets that trade for Pau Gasol last year, or two years ago, if he gets that trade for Pau Gasol and then signs Nene, you know, they're a good team, but this isn't like, oh, Daryl Morey did it again. Like, they would have been kind of screwed. Like, he kept taking swings and he eventually connected, but I don't know that we can say, like, yeah, this has been a genius plan of his. I think it worked out.
I wrote a column on it. What I said was, you got to put yourself, because, you know, you don't target a guy. Like, you put yourself in a position where you can get one of the guys.
Sure.
And the big thing is, like, getting one of those guys is the hard part. Like, that's why I think he realizes, like, oh, like, I can build these really good teams with winning cultures where we're consistently able to make the playoffs or be right above it, and yet no one cares because I can't get that one dude to invest.
Yeah, to me, the James Harden deal was much more genius, far more genius than this one.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. This one was basically he cleared cap space and made, like, and managed to build the exact type. Like, and part of it is, he didn't intend for the Rockets locker room to be like a college atmosphere. He didn't intend for, like, everything to work out the way that it did. It happened to, and you give him credit for being in that position. But I think that for me, it's just the fact that he was convincing Howard to come to me is a big deal, because I would never be able to be in on these meetings. Like, there are people on Twitter like, you should be a GM. I'm like, well, there's a million reasons why that's not true. But among them, is the fact that in these meetings, I would just be like, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. Like, I wouldn't be like Kobe, where I'm like, I'm going to talk down to you because that's ridiculous. But I would just be like, look, I'm not going to sit here and kiss your ass for 45 minutes. I'm not going to do that.
I would definitely handle it like Kobe after about 45 minutes. I would definitely just be like, look, either you want the joy of playing with us or you don't.
Right. Have you seen how good I am? Yeah. See, and that's been, like, really underrated to me, is the fact that everyone's kind of glossed over. I'm like, Kobe, if Kobe had come in and been like, I love you, and, like, done, like, a big emotional scene, like, faked it completely and made it – if he basically watched The Notebook and then replicated that, like, I've sent you letters – like, if he did that, I think Dwight resigns.
I think it would have been very easy to get Dwight to resign just by throwing some shiny objects his way. Like, I really think, I mean, I still expect this thing to fall apart by tomorrow.
Right. All right, what's the term when it goes?
Tears?
Snake version. So we're going to do worst case. I have to go get a soda, so I'm just going to let you go. What's the worst case scenario for Detroit Pistons given Josh Smith $56 million?
Oh, my God. You know, you remember Charlie Villanueva and how good that was? Well, yeah. Now imagine him with a little less offense and a little more defense and a lot more frustration.
Did Josh Smith is worse than Charlie Villanueva?
On offense?
Josh Smith is worse than Charlie V?
In terms of what their roles are? Would you factor in a role and everything? Yeah, I would say Josh Smith on offense has been more disappointing than Charlie Villanueva. I don't understand why we are so in love with Josh Smith's offense. What is he good at?
I know he doesn't go to it enough. I love his post work. I really do. I genuinely love his post work. Like, I like his hook shot more than Dwight's. Like, I love his post work.
2011-2012, true shooting percentage, 49.9.
Oh, it was bad. I was looking at like I did this yesterday when I was looking at Millsaps. It's not. It's bad.
2012-2013, 50.1 true shooting percentage. Like, what am I missing here? The guy hurts offenses. He really does. He hurts their offense. And now is he gonna be the main scoring option in Detroit, or is it gonna be Gigi Datome? I mean, for Josh Smith, I mean, he's not going to play the. I don't believe he's going to play much of the three. I think they're going to have a three-man platoon with Drummond, with Monroe.
Oh my God!
I think Drummond and Monroe are gonna really spend a lot of time at the center, and Josh Smith's gonna play the four.
Oh my God! Oh wait, that's cumulative. Okay, whew. I was about to flip out. Okay, hold on. Did some numbers on Basketball Reference real quick. Nope, still bad. So I looked at Josh Smith last year versus Charlie Villanueva in 2008-2009, right before he got the contract from Detroit, right?
Yeah.
Josh Smith, 18 points last year on 47% shooting. Villanueva shot worse at 45%, but he did score 21.7 points. He outscored Josh Smith.
That's what I'm telling you.
Smith had twice as many assists at 4.3 to 2.4. Nearly, and they rebounded it. Oh my God! Villanueva had 8.9 per 36 to Josh Smith's 8.6.
I'm not. I mean, I'm an idiot, but I'm not this big. Like I'm telling you, there are some similarities here. Now Josh Smith
it's just the assist. Like that's the only area where Smith has him, in field goal percentage.
And Josh Smith is a must.
And Charlie had a better true shooting percentage. Holy crap!
Yeah, because his true shooting percentage is 50.1%. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do. Like
Charlie Villanueva in 2009 had a higher PER than Josh Smith had last year. Oh God, now I'm on board.
Like I feel like I've been taking crazy pills for years because people are like, oh no, Josh Smith's an all-star. He should be an all-star. I'm like, what are we watching here? He's a great defender. I mean, his defense is really, really fun. And when he goes to the basket, he's destructive around the rim. But he can't hit free throws anymore. I mean, he was never that good at them, but he can't. I mean, he shot 51% from the line last year.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's just, you know, when in Arrested Development where George Sr. is trying to explain to Job why he didn't play, like why he wouldn't play catch with him or something like that. He's like, you're just a turd. You're just a turd out there. Maybe saying it to Buster, but that's how I feel about Josh Smith on offense. Like if he was to add, if for some reason he got a, you know, he just was really confused and thought I looked like Maurice Cheeks for a second. He's like, hey coach, what do I need to improve on offense? I'd just be like, you're just a turd out there. Like I think he's so destructive on offense, and it's just. It's a situation where I don't see it getting corrected without a very good point guard. And who do they have? They've got, you know, Brandon Knight and Will Bynum. Like, I don't see those guys putting him in the right position.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Best case.
I'm broken now. I defended the move yesterday. The best case for me is this, is that there is raw production. I always try and get past this. Like, I'm so focused on efficiency. Yeah. Sometimes raw production matters. Like, yes. There's just not a lot of guys that can score 17 points a game in this league. There aren't that many. There are more than a lot of people think, but there aren't that many that can take, like, it's 18 points on 16 shots, which is, again, not awesome. But there aren't a lot of guys that can even produce at that level. He is a stat stuffer. He is great defensively. I love the idea of him and then giving Andre Drummond just the job of, like, just clean up. That's all you have to do. It helps cover for Greg Monroe a lot, which I'm really excited about because Greg Monroe's got a good attitude, a great skill set, and just needs an opportunity to not have to be the guy, and I think he can be excellent.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that this means that Brandon Knight will die less. So he's got that going for him. I think that, and most of it, I'm writing some of this for later in the week where there's teams that are basically decided, you know what, we're going to skip tanking or we're going to skip like the rebuild. We're going to jump like them. The Pistons and New Orleans are two teams that are like, we're not going to do the whole slow wait because we didn't get Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. We can't wait. We have to get better now.
Right.
I think that's actually really smart to recognize, hey, we did the tank thing. We got our guys, but they're not Hall of Famers. So we're going to have to make a little bit of an acceleration here in order to go forward. My big question, I think, with Smith is just like his motivation, which is that's where it's always been. I have this hope in the back of my brain that he was so unhappy after that that first contract, which I was talking to Mark Deeks about this the other day, and he remembers it completely differently. But luckily, like the guys in Detroit remember it the same way I do. Like Smith was on the restricted free agent market, and the Hawks just let him dangle. They're doing the same thing to Teague now. They just let him out there.
Go get an offer. We'll match it.
Yeah, go get an offer. We'll match it. And it's really insulting to the player because they're like, I've played for you for 4 years. You drafted me. I've been played well. Why won't you pay me? And they're like, well, we'll pay you. Just go get your offer.
Right.
Like, which is really how it should work. Like, it's smart for the team's perspective of being able to say, go set the market and we'll match it. You know? Like,
yeah, I agree. I just wrote about this with Pekovic getting an offer. He allegedly got an offer of 4 years, 48. And people are like, why would they do that? I said, maybe it's a sign of respect. And maybe it's protecting against a team, you know, maybe the Cavs get spurred by Bynum and they're just like, screw this, we're going to go get a center. And they throw $15 million a year at Pekovic. Maybe that happens. And this kind of helps avoid that. But for the most part, with restricted free agents, I would say, yeah, go get an offer. Go see what the market is. And then we'll either match that market price or we'll let you go.
Right, but to your point, Smith was pissed off for basically 4 years. And this is something I've always liked about Josh Smith. So many players get pissed off and they become a problem. Smith was never a problem.
No, like just on offense.
You're right, just on offense. But overall, like he wasn't pulling these hijinks that we've gotten from every other NBA superstar. Like nobody, you know, even if you don't want to classify him as a superstar, every other major player has like always pitches a fit and then forces his way out. And Smith is like, no, I want out. If you could trade me, that'd be great. And they're like, well, we can't. And he's like, okay. Like he still went to work. He still did his job. And so my hope is if he goes somewhere where he's like, wow, they really like me here. Like, wow, they really need me. Okay, let me engage and like really goes into himself. Then you have that hope that he morphs into that next level thing that guys tend to hit when they hit about his age. And if he hits that prime and he's engaged, it could be awesome. Now, on the flip side, if he's like, nope, I'm just here to collect the paycheck. Detroit was stupid enough to pay me. We are not a great team. I am here to collect the paycheck. It could be bad.
Yeah.
Like, he and Al Jefferson could be the Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon of this next generation. So
he's got – I mean, I never want to deny, like, the reason I think I'm so down about Josh Smith all the time is, well, one, his play. But two, is the talent's there. You see the I see the talent. You see the talent. Like, this guy should dominate. And I'm not talking about LeBron James dominate, but this guy should be, you know, Andre Kirilenko in his best years with the Jazz. And he's just not. And for whatever reason, he just decides to take horrible shots most of the time. Like, if he just cut everything out past the free throw line extended, if he would just get rid of, like, you know, the 17 to 23 foot shots.
Find him. I'm telling you. He would be shit done.
He would be spectacular.
I'm telling you. I don't know why they should have read my article. If you find him $2,000 for every jump shot he misses. If he makes it, he gets to keep his money. But if he misses a jump shot from further than 15 feet, he gets fined $2,000 for every single instance.
This is last year, he was 77% at the rim.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I know.
Why isn't he at the rim all the time?
I know. See, that's the problem, though, is you're like, but he's not at the rim all the time. And I'm like, but look how good he is when he gets there. You know, it's like when your friends are telling you about that girl or the girlfriend and they're like, but she's insane. She's cheating on you. And you're like, but the sex is really great. And they're like, but she's having it with someone else.
But me sometimes.
Exactly. Al Jefferson. Best case scenario, Al Jefferson.
Jesus. I don't even know how to spin this. He'll get his double doubles. He'll go 20-10. Best case, he goes 20-10, and with another draft, they put a big-time player next to him, and they're a sixth seed. In 2 years, they're a sixth seed. That's best case.
They get to tank respectably. I'm writing something about this later this week as well. They get to tank respectably, which is the key. People only get mad, really, if you do what the Warriors did. If you tank in a way that you just cannot absolutely, like, you're just like, well, you're clearly not trying to be good. Like, you're endeavoring to lose. But if the key with tanking is you just have to build a team that looks like you're trying to win, but is actually not good enough to win at all. You have to look like, well, I tried, I just wasn't good enough. When in reality, it's like, well, if you had tried more to build your team, you would have been better. So they get to tank respectably, and I've said this for I said this when they were doing the playoff thing, and I think I was wrong then, but I keep going back to it. Is I just think at some point you got to build a culture.
Yeah.
Like you I think honestly it's really weird to show you how hard it is. I honestly believe Denver is facing the same problem where they won 57 games last year and still nobody thinks that they can win there, so nobody's willing to sign. Like,
right.
I don't know what it's going to take to get people to believe. Like, Brian Shaw is going to have to go in and just do – like, they're going to have to be a serious team in the eyes of people for that to change. And it's going to have to be a long-term thing because it really seems like people are not going to sign there.
Well, I
don't believe that you can win.
I really think that if they still had Ujiri and George Karl, they wouldn't have had those problems.
Well, I agree. I said that yesterday. I wrote that Iguodala, I said if two of the three things that had happened, if only two of the three things, if they had not lost to the Warriors but Karl and Ujiri had left, or if they lost to the Warriors and Karl had left but Ujiri had stayed, if one of the three things had not happened, I think Iguodala resigns.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But it was – lost in the first round to a team that's supernova hot, with that is in California, which he loves.
Yeah, he loves the tech area, he had some comments today that I saw people tweeting out on Twitter about like how like for like a business investment standpoint and like with his interest in technology, he loves the area that he's going to. That's kind of a cool thing for a player to think about.
He hangs out in California. He loves California, even though not that part. Like, he'll still there. And then the other big key was, like, Mark Jackson, like, being a preacher is going to really appeal to him. Like, that's the kind of coach and person that he wants to be close to. So you factor everything plus the instability in Denver, and then you have that kind of situation. We'll go back to Iggy in a second. But, like, you have to build that kind of culture. And I think that Jefferson at least – you know, to some level puts it there. And honestly, if you got a guy that's – if I'm Rich Cho and I'm making calls, I'm like, okay, are you interested? No. Are you interested? No. The first time somebody says, yeah, I will listen to your call, right, I'm going to be like, okay, we got to get this guy. Like,
you have to show you're willing to pay, and you have to show that you're able to get guys. Like, I'm not saying that Carmelo will want to sign with the Bobcats next year if he opts out because he's clearly going to the Lakers. But – because you know, desperation and all, but you have to be able to prove, like, look, people are willing to come sign with us, like, yeah, you could be a part of that, and I don't expect it to work. I don't think Al Jefferson's good enough to really lead a team like that, but you have to make moves like that when you're that bad.
Worst case scenario,
they're
the Bobcats.
Yeah, they keep. Worst case scenario, they finish, you know, fifth or sixth in the draft order the next 3 years.
Part of my thing with that, though, the reason I'm also okay with it, because everybody's like, you're screwing up your draft order. You're screwing up your odds in the best draft. And I'm like, if I'm the Bobcats, I'm like, look, the lottery is going to screw us anyway. No matter what we do, we get screwed in the lottery. If we get a top pick, it's a horrible year. If it's a great year and we have the worst team in the league, we still don't get the top pick. Nothing saves us. So we might as well go and not be completely horrible.
Yeah, I think there's a certain point where you have to trust that, hey, we can get as good a player at 7 as we can at 3 because our scouting's that good. Now, you don't convince me of that by drafting Cody Zeller 4th.
No.
But I think that you have to – at a certain point, you have to say – ping pong balls are great or whatever, but we believe in our scouting.
Yeah. It's also like, look, the Harrison twins are going to be there at 5 or 6. Gordon's going to be there at 5 or 6. There's a number of other kids. I keep trying to explain this to people. I'm like, look, I'm not high on this draft because I'm like, oh, Andrew Wiggins. I'm high on this draft because I seriously look at the top 10 guys, and I go, those 10 guys would go the top 10 in last year's draft in that order. Like, the top 10 guys from next year would be top 10 guys next, like, last year. How bad this last one was.
And Cody Zeller at 4.
And Cody Zeller at 4. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that's part of it. Maybe you just don't draft well, so it doesn't really help you.
Yeah.
Let's do Iguodala, and then we'll do Millsap.
Yes.
Iguodala, worst case scenario.
Worst case is there are too many injuries on the team, and he's not good enough to make up for it. That's really it. Like, it's not even so much a Steph Curry thing anymore. I talked about this with Ethan. Like, Bogut's injuries are a concern, but really you just need him healthy when the playoffs come around.
Mm-hmm.
And in, but they're at a point where making the playoffs is no longer going to be good enough. They have to continue to advance. Like, they can't be a first round and out. They have to advance. They have to keep working their way up to be like a top three or four seed. And if there are injuries throughout the year, Iggy's not good enough to lift them over that. And so they really still need health. And I don't know that it's anything that has to do with Iguodala per se. He's still very good, but you're paying a lot of money to a role player, a very good role player. But, you know, sometimes that can hamstring you, depending on if you can get out of David Lee's contract in the next 2 years.
On the drive back on the mound, I was thinking about this conversation we were going to have, and I was like, all right, what's the worst case? And I kept trying to go through scenarios outside of the injury factor, and I was like, you know, he and Curry can't really coexist because Curry needs the ball and Iguodala needs the ball to cut, and Curry's not as great on the catch and shoot as he is shooting with the ball in his hand. And I was like, they're still pretty good in that situation.
Still pretty good. I guess you could say the worst case maybe Harrison Barnes' growth as a player gets stunted.
Yeah, or the decision to give him that kind of money, even though they've done well with their bench and just. Royce Young just posted on CBSSports.com report that Jermaine O'Neal has joined the team.
Tony Douglas, too.
And Tony Douglas, who do what he do. So, yeah. You know, I mean, like, their bench looks good, but part of it I always think about this a lot, where when a team makes an unexpected run, a lot of it's lightning in a bottle sometimes. Like,
yeah.
The right combination of guys existed in the right framework against the right opponents at the right time. And so if Carl and Jack were just part of a combination of guys that just, like, magically came together, it's not guaranteed that Spates and Jermaine O'Neal and Tony Douglas are going to be those guys next year, that they're going to mesh the same way. And then you've got all this money tied up in a injury-ridden front court or starting line, and your bench isn't good enough to be able to overcompensate for it when you really got a lot of production off of your bench last year. But overall – you know, I started thinking about how good I think that they're going to be, and I think that they're good enough to – I think they're good enough to win third in the West.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think they'll ironically be the Nuggets next year.
It's funny that, like, because they were successful without David Lee in the playoffs, people now think he's – like, David Lee's a bad player.
Well, I don't – why is this coming – I hate this, man. And I know, like, Ethan's, like, the captain of it, and I
– Ethan just doesn't like David Lee. They don't like each other.
And, like, I just –
He was third team All-NBA last year.
He's a really good player offensively. And defensively, he got really unfairly singled out by a piece at slot.
Yeah.
Which if we were going to go – like, let's go have one of those detailed breakdowns of every single player in the league showing why they are terrible at something that they do. And we're going to start, you know, we'll find a lot of problems with a lot of players because guess what? Professional basketball is hard.
Yeah. Well, David Lee sucks on defense.
Like, he does.
He just does. He sucks on defense, but it's not so much so that you can't make up for it. Like, it's the idea that, oh, well, we'll just go at David Lee every time. Right, but Andrew Bogut's backing up. And now you've got Andre Iguodala swiping down from the strong side, and you've got Klay Thompson rotating on the weak side to the shoot. Like, it's not like you can – this isn't the 90s where you can just isolate a bad defender and go at him. Like, this is a team defense game. And David Lee is not so bad on defense that you can't make up for his shortcomings. Like, he still rebounds almost as well as anybody in the league, and he's a great option on offense. Like, he's a really good player. I get why the Warriors wouldn't need him anymore, but this idea that he's bad is just insane. Maybe you don't like his contract, whatever, but he's still a really good player.
Here's what's crazy about Iguodala. So, because obviously I spent a lot of time, you know, covering him last year. I did two features on him. Don't know him personally at all. I don't try and get to know these guys. I just don't know him at all. But his level of excitement for being in Golden State is paramount to any situation he's been in Philadelphia or Denver. He is finally really excited to be somewhere, and that's kind of terrifying because if he's excited and engaged – it could be really awesome because you also worry, like, oh, he's going to try and do too much. last year, he honestly started the year as very skeptical of George Karl's offense, and by the end of the year was the guy saying, we have to work for quality shots.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. Like, the Nuggets paid all that money for him to have 1 year and basically learn the secret to basketball offensively, which is, like, nothing that Doug Collins says. The opposite of what Doug Collins says. That's what good offensive basketball is. And his understanding of the value of three-pointers and shots at the rim was pretty phenomenal last year. He had so many opportunities to take those contested jumpers and opted not to. So that's, I think, is going to work really well for him. So overall, you know, great job them. Paul Millsap, worst case.
Worst case, he's just not that big of a difference maker.
Yeah.
Isn't that, you know, I guess, like, that's it? He's a very good player. I've never been incredibly high on him. I think there are some years where he's deserved, like, all-star consideration and blah, blah, blah. Maybe he should have even made it 1 year. And he's awesome. Like, he's a really awesome player in crunch time, and I think that you need a guy who has his kind of effort all the time. And the fact that he wants to – like, he's getting paid now, and he's going to play to the point where – like, you could say this is a bad thing, but I really don't think it is with him – He's gonna play to a degree that shows not only is he worth the money, but he's actually worth more, and he should get more in his next contract. Like, the fact that he's on a 2-year deal, I think we're gonna see the potential for a David West type impact with him.
I don't understand. Like, that's why it's been so confusing, because hearing the Hawks are talking about Brandon Jennings and Monta Ellis. I'm like, how can you have that after you just got this amazingly sweetheart deal of Paul Millsap for 2 years, 19. It's the best value deal of free agency. This is the best contract I have seen handed out. There is not a better one for value for dollar.
This is the problem, though, is that you're given a gift certificate to a store, and you need to spend that money. You need to spend the entire gift certificate. So you just start picking out crap that you don't even want, but you can get. And, like, sometimes people are like, no, I'll just wait till next time I come in and I'll see what they have. And some people are like, oh, I've got this gift certificate. It's burning a hole in my wallet. Like, I need to get it out. I need to use this up so I'm done with it.
Yeah, so that's the gap between my wife and I, because my wife will go and spend exactly what she wants to buy, and then she's like, oh, I have stuff for leftover, and she'll have it for later, and it's like a secret, like, oh, hey, I still have this gift certificate versus me, where I go to Barnes & Noble immediately upon getting a gift card, and I'm like, I don't even have time to read anything. Let me buy this $45 worth of books that I'm not going. There's going to sit on my shelf for 2 days.
You're like, yeah, maybe I do need three page holders at $3 a pop. I've got this money left.
I really need another leather bound journal, because that's really what I do with my time, is write long missives in a leather journal by hand.
Right.
Who does that, honestly? So, yeah, the Millsap deal, I just think it's phenomenal. I love how he works with Horford. I think it's incredible. It's another I'm very excited, Zach, because this means this is another 2 years for you and I to continuously have to remind people that Al Horford plays the five very well.
He has played it his entire career. Like, I would say 80% of his minutes over a, what, 8-year career at this point, 9-year career, have been at the five. This idea that he is a four masquerading as a five, if that were the case, it wouldn't have lasted this long.
Yep.
This is insane to me. What if, and this is what I always come back to, what if he had an incredibly talented big man to play with at the University of Florida named, let's just call him Moakeem Moa. And what if Moakeem Moa was so good, but he was kind of more limited? Like, he was a definite five, and Horford was a little more versatile, a little more mobile, could play a little more outside, so he played the four so they could win back-to-back championships at college. Maybe that's why he was a four in college. Maybe if Moakeem Moa had never showed up, Horford would have been the five there.
So the Hawks are going to be better. My question is, since they're not tanking, what's Ferry's goal? What's he going to do long-term? I mean, if Al Horford were to take a leap, they'd be set. That's always been my thing, is if Horford were to suddenly take a leap, they would be in really great position. But I've also kind of come to the conclusion, like, I can't expect that. I just can't. Horford is phenomenal on his own, but he's not dominant. That's kind of what the difference that we've been talking about with some of these guys. And Millsap's the same way, where it's like, God, he's so good, but he's not dominant.
Yeah,
there are very few dominant players in the league.
Yeah, you can get kind of trapped into that. hey, we've got a lot of guys, we've got a few guys that are really, really good. And it's like, oh, okay, so who's your definite star? And you're like, well, I don't really know. And that can be a problem. It could also, I think that Horford taking a leap would be big, but it would be even bigger for Jeff Teague to take a leap.
Yeah.
I think Horford could remain as good as he is, but if Jeff Teague becomes a definite top 12 point guard in the league, then, and I'm sure there's some Hawks fan freaking out right now going, oh, he's definitely a top 12 point guard. He's probably not. Calm down. But I think that if he could become like a definite like top 12, top 10 point guard in the league, that would be huge for them.
Well, it'd be huge for Milwaukee because apparently he's going to end up there and the Hawks are going to sign Jennings or some other nonsense.
I would actually like that a lot. That would be hilarious.
I want them to sign none of those guys. I want them to start Schrader. I want them to sign a backup point guard. I want them to sign Will Bynum before he resigned with Detroit to annoy me because I like Will Bynum and I like Detroit and I don't like Will Bynum on Detroit. I was just, don't do this. Like,
I feel the same way about Jason Maxfield. Yeah. I think I would love Jason Maxfield if he wasn't in Detroit. And it's not like I don't have any bias towards Detroit. It's just sometimes you see a guy who's like a pretty decent player in his role in a uniform for far too long. You're just like, I just want to see him somewhere new. Let's try something new. New teammates, new system, everything.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. And then you're the Knicks and you trade for Andre Bargnani. But let's see. So we've been on this for about 15 minutes. Do you want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more.
You want to do?
How about this? Let's do a hypothetical.
Okay.
Best case, worst case, Andrew Bynum in Cleveland for 2 years, $24
million. Best case.
Let me say this. A healthy Andrew Bynum in Cleveland. That Bennett pick makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. I can't really talk about Cleveland anymore. Their fans have made it to where I want the team and all of their fans to just melt. I described it very in depth to my wife the other day. I want the team and their fans to just melt into the ocean like popsicles being dropped into the sea. That's how I want it to be. Want it to be – they just dissolve away.
That seems reasonable.
Because I'm just so tired. Because I said in a post that it could cause some problems because then you move Thompson to the four – when you kind of were going to have him at the five, and now Bennett's coming off the bench and he's a number one pick, and they were like perplexed by this and thought that Thompson was always a four, and then half of them are like, no, Thompson's a five, but he'll come off the bench. Everyone thinks that they absolutely have the answer and you're an idiot.
Right.
And yet they're all split. And so I'm just like, okay, whatever. I like the Bennett pick, I think, independent of whoever is playing the five. I think that whoever plays the five has to go to the right block, and on the left side, Kyrie and Bennett are going to run the pick and pop, and they'll see if they can get something going there. The best case scenario is that Andrew Bynum – I'm not kidding with this. Andrew Bynum finds religion.
Zen Buddhism?
Don't care what it is. Zen Buddhism – he can become Catholic, Episcopalian. He can convert to Judaism. He can be a Southern Baptist. He can be a Third Baptist. He can be anything that he wants as long as he has some sort of moment that changes his outlook on life and forces some sort of discipline upon him mentally. Yeah. He needs to have something to occur in him. He needs to physically get well, and then he needs to have something in him that changes his outlook forever. Islam, whatever. Don't care.
I do like
Satan worship could be bad.
I like the idea of him going to Cleveland just to reunite with Mike Brown. I do find that humorous. Like, I don't know that he and Mike Brown are actually on bad terms or anything, but just with the whole 3-point incident, I would find that to be. I like the move for. I like 2-year deals. Like, I've talked about this with you a lot. Like, I don't think there is such thing as a bad 2-year deal. I really don't. And if you're throwing $24 million at him for 2 years for a guy who might not be healthy, well, guess what? Now you got an expiring next year.
Like, well, it's a team option second year. That's what makes this okay to me.
Yeah, yeah. And a team option for a second year in this case, like, even better. Like,
I'll pay Bynum $12 million because I've been trying to do this in my head with some of these guys is figure out how much are certain parts of their game worth. Because, like, with Iguodala, I think to myself – Well, you're paying $10 million for his defense, and then you're paying $4 million for his offense and leadership.
Right.
And you're there. Like, you're there, right? That right there is a perfect breakdown of why you pay him $14 million. Like, with Paul Millsap, it's like, well, I would pay $9 million for his offense, and then everything else is like gravy. And so with Bynum, it's basically, I would pay $10 million to have a seven-foot guy with that kind of size.
Yeah.
Who isn't Tiago Splitter.
Right.
And then I would pay $2 million for a guy with his kind of skill. So I'm okay with that. Now, I would rather do like some sort of subtraction to be like, well, I'd rather pay $8 million because $4 million needs to come off for his injury. But because of the market for him, because of the name, because there are so few guys that are 7 feet with that kind of frame, with that kind of skill set, they just don't exist. I'm okay with taking a flyer for 1 year, $12 million if he passes the physical and everything works out. Yeah. And it's great. Worst case scenario is he's, you know, it's clown shoes all over again.
I would say worst case scenario is he tries to shoot a three-pointer with a bowling ball and it hits Kyrie Irving in the knee. That is the way, and I think that's plausible. I think there's like a 45% chance that happens.
That's like rock bottom.
Yeah, but I would take that 55% of it not happening.
I've hesitated for so long because I've loved what Cuban has done throughout the course of his ownership of the franchise. I love that their moves consistently over the past, you know, really every year prior to last year. And now I'm to the point with this Bynum thing. They want to sell that they have this plan B. There is no plan B. You clearly have no plan B. Just admit it. Just say, well, we thought we were going to get Dwight. We didn't. And so now we got to figure out something else. And honestly, even then, I would still probably trash you because that Calderon deal floors me.
It's just weird. If the explanation for it is, well, we could always use the stretch on him. What?
You could. Why am I going to pay some? Like, this is a really great signing because eventually we can pay him over more years.
Right. Like,
go away.
You're never going to sell me on a deal where it's like, wow, you guys didn't really need 4 years of him. It's like, oh, no, we can stretch it. No, we'll be fine. We can stretch it. Like, that's.
You make it into 6 years where it's just not in the books for two.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't mind Calderon on that team. They need a real point guard.
I agree.
And
if they gotten him for 420, I've been like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, like four and nearly 30. Like, that's just a lot for an older point guard who doesn't play defense. And I don't even care if he is bad at defense, but 4 years of worsening defense. Well, it's not going to get better.
Part of it for me is also, these signings are always dependent upon who the team is. There are teams where if they went out and paid 3 years, $15 million. For is that what Pachulia got? 315?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Like, if they paid 3 years, $15 million, yeah, it's 15.6. I'd be okay with it because there are teams that are like, all right, we're on the verge. We just need to get that guy. We need to get a center to be able to do the dirty work. Pachulia can do that. I'd be like, all right, that's fine. It's a little bit much, but I can understand that. It's a center market that's exaggerated. That's cool. With the Mavericks, I get that they're like, we have to keep trying with Dirk, but you don't just throw that stuff out there. There are teams where I think Calderon for even 28 is fine because they need a point guard that badly, or they're in a position to contend. Like, they're a title contender that needed a point guard. And then it's like, all right, I can see that. But that's not Dallas. Dallas has Dirk and that's it. That's all Dallas has. They've got Dirk and that's it.
Yeah. And I guess if they get Bynum and he's healthy, it's a good – like. I think it works.
But then we're in that thing, and this is a rule I do. If you got to start going if with a team, you're in real trouble.
But I'm with a long term deal, I would agree. If it's still a 2 year deal, even if it's not a team option for the second year, I'm fine with that because, like, are they going to go after LeBron next year? Maybe, but are they going to get him? No. You know, so I think you have to start trying to maximize your dollar value, and a healthy Bynum can get you there. Not to the title. Like, they're not winning a title with that team, but it can make you a very respectable team.
I mean, tanking doesn't help them either, because by the time that even if they were to land number one miraculously, and by the time Wiggins comes of age, Dirk's retired. So,
right, exactly.
So they really, you know, they're out of options, and it's unfortunate, but it's just kind of true, and it's you know, I hate to keep killing him for letting that 2011 squad go. And, you know, Rob Mahoney's written a lot about, for SI's written a lot about how that was still the right move at the time and how it made sense in the new CBA. I can't let go of the idea that if you had Tyson Chandler, as bad as Chandler was last year, even if you still had Tyson Chandler with Dirk Nowitzki, all right, you've got power forward center and you can, everything else you can torque around it, but not without that, you know?
Yeah. I still like the move to break up the team and not, I mean, cause the amount of money you have had to pay Kidd and Chandler and Jason Terry, maybe you, I mean, I think the championship was legitimate, but maybe that was kind of lightning in a bottle, you know? And,
yeah.
And then you're extending that and you're extending Barea for 4 years. Like, there was just a lot of luxury tax to pay on a team that you didn't know was going to still be that good for very long.
Yeah.
And so I'm fine with keeping options open, flexibility. Now they haven't capitalized on that flexibility and they haven't acquired assets in the process, so that's a problem. You would like them to be able to do that. I mean, you would like them to be able to do what Daryl Morey did,
yeah,
in a way, you know. I mean, he didn't dismantle a championship team, but he had to move on and he acquired assets and kept flexibility and it eventually worked out, but you don't see the Mavericks acquiring assets right now.
Last thing before we go, how glad are you that the Wolves did not sign OJ Mayo?
Oh my God. Someone yesterday was like, oh, isn't OJ at 3 years, $24 million better than Kevin Martin at 4 years, 27 or whatever he's getting?
No, and I'm captain of the OJ and fan club.
I said, absolutely not. There's no way that's better. I understand that Kevin Martin is not a defender by any means. He's a really bad defender.
He's getting older, and I mean, there's a bunch of reasons. He's still better.
But you're
he's
not counting. Still on, you're not counting on Kevin Martin to be a defensive player. You're counting on OJ Mayo to be a defensive player. And guess what? He's just not that good on defense. Yeah. He can be, but he's not consistent. And I'll take what I know from a player with consistency, which that's what you're getting with Kevin Martin, even warts and all. But with OJ, there's so much up in the air. Like, we've done that with Michael Beasley before. And not saying he's as bad as Michael Beasley, but there are some similarities in how they affect an offense, in my mind.
When do you leave for Vegas?
I leave Thursday afternoon, and I get back in October.
For those of you that are wondering, Zach Harper will be covering the NBA Summer League from Las Vegas, Nevada, for CBSSports.com. He'll have...
The entire time.
Maybe some video, maybe some interviews on the podcast, maybe lots of entertaining things. I'll fill in wherever. Tomorrow we'll do, I guess, more of the best case, worst case, and kind of fill out the rest of the news, and
yes,
then we'll send you on your way.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.